Min campus alihor, miai Karsten Schwene. Akoma program iħor fi sensi la minn kampus għaliħor mi għaj Karsten Xwiera postanna fi t-tisa program u għajmin segwa di sensi la forsi mill bidu jew anki sempliċement sema xoħrajn qabel jafilli minn ġimgħa għal ġimgħa niltaqa ma' nies u b'xi mod virtuali ħanajdu hekk imur minn kampus għaliħor kif jgħid isem il-programm stess biex niltaqa ma' numru ta' nies professjonisti fis-setturi tal-edukazzjoni għolja, tal-kultura, tal-politika kulturali, tal-manager u ċertu drabi wkoll lin mill-ħitan reali u virtuali wkoll ta' xi campus ta' xi università. U fil-fatt ikollna ġieli mistednin li jassoċjaw affarijiet ta' riċerka, ta' studju, ta' pjattaformi, ta' networks u jaqdu wkoll esperjenzi forum ta' ħajja differenti, impenji, attivizmu, anki temi differenti mill-ambjenza, l-ġustizza soċjali, per eżempju. U jagħmlu dan anki minn bażi partikolari jew iktar minn waħda, anki permezz tal-vjaġġar mhux biss virtuali imma anki dak reali. U fl-istess ħin ukoll jippruvaw jifexxu x-xogħol tagħhom kemm jista' jkun b'mod ta' impatt wiesa'. Il-mistiedna tal-lum naħseb toqgħod partikolari f'din id-deskrizzjoni li tajtkom s'issa hija neka ekbunna. Neka hija speċjalista fil-komunikazzjoni u ambaxxatriċi magħrufa bħala life ambassador fid-dinja tal-arti u l-kultura. Tema sfond baċċen qawwi fuq kwistjonijiet ta' ġustizzja soċjali li aċċennajt għalihom qabel għaliex minn fejn jitopera l-aktar ngħidu hekk bħala bażi bħala ofol tax-xogħol tagħha ġewwa Abuja, il-kapitali tan-Niġerja, tagħmel ħafna xogħol ma' komunitajiet ta' bniet, ta' żgħażagħ, speċjalment tfal, xogħol li bl-Ingliż forsi nsejħulu empowerment, ta' xogħol ta' komunità li jassoċi ħafna elementi differenti miegħu. Kif ħadd għidilna fl-intervista, huwa xogħol li huwa ta' sfida, xogħol li huwa diffiċli li jrikjedi ħafna attenzjoni, ħafna enerġija, ħafna dedikazzjoni u anke sakrifiċċju anke fuq livell personali tagħha tal-familja u ta' membri oħra tal-komunità tagħha li mdaħlin f'dan ix-xogħol. Hemm ħafna sfidi li jikkombattu mill-tibdil fil-klima sa terrorizmu, tal-fanatiċiżmu u tal-estremiżmu, reliġjuż u mhux. U hemm ċertu perikli li ċertu drabi ġieli ngħid li nifsi dil-ħaġa xorti, unikament ħaġa ta' xorti li ngħix f'post bħal ma ngħix bħal Malta fil-waqt li mhix ġenna tal-art għandna problemi tagħna ovvjament bħal kull imkien imma hemm ċertu postijiet li nammet fil-perspettiva tiegħi huma ħafna 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 iktar diffiċli. Nsemmi l-pandemija wkoll fi sloħrajn qed jikkunsidra li pajjiż bħal Malta wieħed jista' jirrifjuta, jista' jagħżel li ma jiġix iffaċċinat jew ma jemmitx li hemm problemi fil-pandemija f'pajjiżi bħal Niġerja, pajjiż enormi, popolazzjoni enormi ta' 80 miljun dak huwa lussu. Huwa lussu u mhux jagħżla. Neka karattru kif ħa nisimgħu b'saħħtu qawwi entużjast pożittiv li però jmur lilin minn klixxej u fil-fatt jiena mhux ħa naħdem parla iżejjed biex nisimgħu il-leħna u nisimgħu anke l-esperjenzi tagħha li ħa taqsam magħna fid-dinja tal-kultura. Għaliex dal-programm jagħmel hekk ukoll ħajkollna xorti nisimgħu kbiċċej mużika illi ħa tagħżilna hi. Tagħmel nisemmi wkoll il-mużika tal-bidu, tal-sfond u tal-eluq illi hija mogħtija lilna ġentilment mill-ARC Consultancy ta' Davinia Galia u hija marbuta mal-proġett Medinea li kif jista' tisimgħu l-ħsejjes proprju tqarreb dawn l-influenzi Mediterranju kollha matul dan il-programm. Allora, qiegħed nisimgħu l-intervista ma neka egbuna matunda nel program min kampu saliba. Welcome back, our listeners, at the beginning of yet another program in the series Min Campus Alihor, which in Maltese loosely translates as campus hopping, connecting campuses from one campus to another. But as listeners have also gotten used to by now, I'm sure, it's not, strictly speaking, only university campuses or higher education institutions in and of themselves in a restricted way. We're sort of taking campuses in a quite general way. So, yes, we have listened to professors, academics, researchers, people who have literally hopped between campuses around the world. But we have also taken, till now, some local experiences which connect to the global. Some particular stories which develop around community development projects also focus on particular aspects of advocacy, campaigns, communication, somehow arts and culture always somehow fit into it, I guess also because of my background. And in the case of today, with my guest, a short introduction about whom we heard in the beginning in Maltese, as I like doing, to keep the Maltese connection even with international speakers. The element of local and global, of community projects, which, however, fan outwards and connect somehow to realities which are faced by people all over the world, not only currently, because certain issues, certain problems have gone on as long as the human being has developed societies to live in, but in our particular time, especially with globalization, commercialization, and other isations, I know don't need to list, certain issues have become even more pronounced, prominent, and urgent. So, my guest today, Neka Egbuna from Nigeria, I welcome you, first of all, and thank you for being with me, Neka.
Thank you very much, Karsten. I'm so happy to be here today. Thank you.
We've prepared a little bit recently, obviously, as I do with every guest, to try to see what areas to focus on, because a program like this, a bit less than an hour, isn't long enough, so it doesn't allow us to go too much into detail into a whole person's life and what they are engaged in. However, because of possibly common contacts you and I share, I remember the first few times we met, Paris, I believe, because of UNESCO network looking at cultural diversity in relation to the convention of 2005. So that takes us back about 15 years or thereabouts. And somehow networks, works, even friends at the end of the day, inspire how we work and how we develop our careers. And this program is about career paths and looking at different stages, also possibly being of interest to listeners, to listeners who are students, researchers, people who somehow are interested in the field of education, not only the academic sort, but also the very practical, outdoorsy, community-oriented and engaged type of research and project work. And Neka, in your case, this makes me think a lot about of how you operate, where you operate, and also the project, which I see, especially through social media, also because of the pandemic, the minus of not being able to meet so often, the plus of reaching out and connecting online. In fact, this program is part inspired by that way of reacting to the pandemic's confinement situation. For me to stop here in my introduction and pass over to you, as I do with guests in general, I ask them somehow to retrace their steps. And if possible, before coming to a bit of detail about what you do now and what you are engaged in the field of arts, culture, working with community, the communication element, which is very strong, I'd like you to take us sort of a bit even step by step from where maybe all this started, where your interest stemmed from, in terms of family, friends, contact, school, education systems, and opportunities to start developing your career as you did.
Yeah, thank you. Going back to when I was a child, I grew up in a family where my parents encouraged us to be creative, to think aloud and think around any area we are interested in growing our career. So anyway, even though my mother wanted me to be a writer, she wanted me to go into literature. I thought I was going to be an artist and use the arts environment to solve my country's problems. So I'm someone who loves Nigeria very much. I've never really thought about living in Nigeria and staying there for so long. I mean, sorry, living outside Nigeria for so long. I've always wanted to have something doing in Nigeria, and I thought I could use the culture sector to solve it. So my mom was a writer. She was also a researcher in African and Igbo history. So she used to visit a lot of universities in Europe and the US and as a visiting professor. So she was a long background in the culture sector, and that's what took me working in UNESCO at the time, also with other local communities and NGOs before I got to UNESCO. But then I realized that with every decade or with every 5 years, it's like the dynamics in the country changes. And I felt that to be more relevant and more practical, I had to learn more about the areas that are more topical, where I can make more impact. So my career hasn't been like straightforward in one line. You see me doing this and that at every given time point. But it's just all about curiosity, learning that area and knowing how to address it. So, so I've gone from culture and now it's more on peace and security.
On the point of peace and security now, and somehow culture having introduced you, led you into the path of engaging in what I was saying before in introducing you, and also what you now very clearly termed as issues, which are maybe higher up the social and political agenda, more urgent. It makes me think that somehow, on the one hand, you have managed to keep in touch with both worlds. They are not totally separate worlds. There is much across the world which looks at ways of addressing conflict through culture. For example, I myself participate in a course at the University of Malta, the Center for Conflict Resolution. I know you, and I hope you'll be able to tell us a bit more about this, do this a lot on the ground with different community members. Maybe to go back a little bit, one thing which struck me when you said it, was how you said sort of your mother, because of her own background, because of her education, it was encouraging you to take the artist's line. And it's not something that common, I must say. I don't hear many people say my parents encouraged me or they wanted me to be a writer or an artist. Many times sort of a person needs to really pursue that line in spite of sometimes the fears and the concerns of parents who want their children to take on a steady job, for example, or a stable job. So that was really interesting. That really struck me. So I guess because you also used the word curiosity, there was on the one hand, an environment which maybe you can go a little bit more into on the global or the general scenario of politics, economics, social challenges which Nigeria faces, not on its own, but one country, a big country with a big population that faces many challenges. On the other hand, however, you have your own realities, and through them, you wanted to tackle the bigger picture. How did that develop then?
Yes, just like I said, my mom was very much of an artist. So she was a free spirit, and it made her very, very adventurous. Okay, so she at some point went into politics. She wanted to run for a political office, which was quite high, and that was in the 90s. So the experiences she went through at the time helped open my eyes to the fact that there is a deeper reality on ground. It had to do with gender discrimination and the security threats that were around the fact that she wanted to run for political office. So that inspired me to want to do something about it later. But somehow I couldn't figure out how I would do it. I was thinking that through writing, I'll be able to talk more about it. But realizing the dynamics of Nigerian's culture, you really have to nip it in the bud. You really have to go into policies and frameworks and talk with the stakeholders to be able to have a change. So while working with UNESCO, what struck me the most was the, the mantra. Let me use the word mantra. Building peace in the minds of men and women. So it told me a lot. Initially, it was building peace in the minds of men. Then when the gender concept was coming in, they changed it to building peace in the minds of women. So it got me thinking. And then I wanted to do more with the arts and culture sector. So I didn't want to leave the UNESCO culture unit. When I got the opportunity to work and do some work with the U40 World Forum, it changed my life. I was able to work with so many, because right then there was no internet as such in Nigeria. It was mostly the emails. So the technology wasn't that strong, but we were able to network with so many people from so many different countries. And we were talking about the diversity of cultural expressions. And I know, you know, the challenges that have to do with cultural expressions, human rights and so on. So it got me now thinking on that line that, okay, I need to learn more about the politics of the country, what is happening. So gradually, working in the culture of, we had this project we were working on, a culture of peace project. From there, we got a request. Sorry, I'm just missing something. U40 was 2009. That was the first time all of us gathered. So I think around the time I got home was the beginning of what would lead to the insecurity we have in the country today. So it started happening around 2009, and by 2010, the security situation in the country had worsened, which will now lead us to the 12 years of insecurity we have in the country today. So working in UNESCO then, I was still trying to promote some tourism with international workers who were coming into the organization. Mm-hmm. But then we had to stop because of the crisis in some of the regions. So we stopped that, and then most projects were no longer interested very much in culture. And that's one major thing that affected the arts and culture environment up to this moment. Most of the people promoting the culture sector are private individuals. The government had a very vibrant cultural sector, but promoting it also was hard for them because many people were interested in survival, not arts and culture. And I think that the reason why that was a big problem was because we didn't step up on time to learn how to program culture as a solution in development, linking culture with the SDGs or MDGs at that time, linking it with the UNDAFs, linking it with the SDGs today, linking it with several policies. It wasn't just possible. We had at the time a national culture policy, which we modified, reviewed in, we were reviewing it in 2007. To date, that cultural policy has not been finalized. So we keep reviewing it, but there is nothing really it is offering us, or you can't really make it a document that you can relate with today. So going back to with UNESCO, we had a project on countering violent extremism. The call came around 2011, sorry. It was one of the earliest calls for peace and security in Nigeria. So it came and our office applied. It was me and my manager at the time. So we applied for this call, and it was one of the first projects that the UNESCO office in Nigeria got to get into solving the peace and security issues at the time using education, culture, and dialogue. Because, you know, when you go into the way culture, if you're going into programming culture for evaluate, when you're going to have a smart and result-based planning for the culture sector, you get to find out the elements, the indicators that will help to solve problems. And we found out that some of these issues are related to misunderstandings. When you don't understand someone's history or somebody's past, or you just want to assume, it leads to a lot of crisis. So that project was very, very helpful in helping us find out that dialogue, and that was 2011, 2012. Dialogue is a good way forward to resolving violent extremism.
Yes, and addressing these different issues, which you're very, very effectively and very directly, also in brief, which I really appreciate, commenting on. We're close to our first pause, Neka, so even to catch our breath, maybe I'll ask you to help me introduce the two tracks. Let's start from the first one. We'll listen to the second one later. You chose two tracks for us with a bit of meaning for you in them, as our guests generally do on this program, Min Campus Alior. So I'd ask you to tell us a little bit about the first track we're going to listen to.
Okay, the first track is called Cultural Praise. It's by a musician, a popular musician in Nigeria called Casey. So the first time I heard the song, I came to tears because, you know, now in my country, almost every part of the country is having one security situation or the other. So many people cannot travel home. So it reminded me of my childhood, the songs they used to play in church and maybe in community events, when so communities gather together and come to compete for one dance or the other. So this musician used the same instrumentals, even though it's a religious or a gospel song. Well, people dance to it regardless. I'm surprised when I go to different hear from different parts of my friends from different parts of Nigeria. They are dancing to it regardless of their religion, and they like the sound. So that's why I introduced it to you, because it's just what I play every day. So the meaning is something very inspiring, reminding us that we should never give up. So it's mostly gospel. It's talking about what God can do for us, but listening to it is very inspiring. So that's Casey's Cultural Praise Volume 1.
Let's listen to it then. Thank you.
It's the cars on the beat. Hello there. Kedihe mgenye kie oka ume O mama mazura rume Kedihe mgenye
Taro wono chukuna Oyunu ganefe Mune zinu no mo Aige fe chuku ọka kake bi n'igwe na mmanụ ise n'ọkụ ugbu alfa na omega naanị gị ka ị ga-efe anọkwana n'obi abụọ anọkwana n'iru uju kpebiere onwe gị taa para onye ị ga-efe mụ n'onwe m osisi na-enye ọgaranya ngada ọkaka kebi n'igwe malite n'ọgụ ugo ọgaranya ngada mụ n'onwe m.
We're back to Main Campus Alihor with me, Karsten Schwerup, and my guest today, Neka Dbuna, talking to me from Nigeria about her experiences, about her career path in the field of culture, the arts, activism, with a growing focus on peace, security, and conflict resolution. And after that very inspiring and also very positive piece of music that we heard, and I thank you, Neka, for sharing with us. Probably there'll be even more people now who listen to it as part of their daily fix in music and add it to their playlist. So in the second part, where we have a bit more time to go into your current work and your current research, maybe I can start off by making an admission. Apart from never having been further south in Africa than the northern countries, the Mediterranean countries, that's as far as I got, and not to Nigeria. However, it makes me think of the relations that a late anthropology professor at the University of Malta, Professor Paul Clough, had developed in Nigeria over decades. He loved the place, he had lots of friends and contacts. He'd narrate about how in the 70s and the 80s, he'd run between contacts and communities, carrying out his anthropological studies and his anthropological work on a scooter or a motorbike, and how also recently, before he sadly passed away, he spoke about his contacts in Nigeria, but how they reflected on tough conditions, on the way even former activities that he himself would have carried out in his younger days would be really hard-pressed to carry out now because of security issues. And earlier on, you also, well, you mentioned the many things, but you mentioned the international collaboration most clearly because of the UNESCO connection. And maybe for the benefit of our listeners, when you mention U40, the U40 stands for under 40 at the time. All of us members of this network, I was very happy to be part of it. And there are various members of this network, directly or indirectly, also participating in this program. Some guests are from the network. Now we joke that we are all 40. We are over 40 because time has passed.
Yes.
But that international dimension has always been very important for you and for your colleagues, for your community. Maybe can we start off from there, because I found very effective the way you have obviously communicated to us. That is your job, after all. That is your field of expertise. How the international dimension and how the local dimension have really gone together. It's not just a local affair. It's a very international one. And somehow, because certain places around the world from time to time attract a lot of negative news, rightly so, crises around the world that attract attention. However, it can be a reason to despair and give up. But as we heard in that song you chose, it's also a strong motivator to work more. So if we had to focus a little bit on the here and now and your recent work and your recent projects, do you see maybe some changes, some shifts, some different ways of having to operate from, say, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, to more recent times? And maybe has the pandemic as well created further obstacles for collaboration?
Okay, I would look at it from the positive side, because if I can judge between, let's say, because I said 2009, when I met U40, also where I met you for the first time, and I'm happy we've maintained that contact up to today. So the U40 was, 2009 was a life-changing moment for me. So judging between then and now, we can say that 10 years has passed, so I can compare. Before the past 10 years, most Nigerians were more like learning how to catch up. Our stories were probably not being told by us. But today, many Nigerians, especially driven by the younger generation, because of some of the privileges they don't have, some of the rights that they have been fighting for, they are more open-minded and they are more outspoken. So regarding international relations, the difference I've noticed is that even development partners, development workers are more keen on the local population telling their story, because probably the way it was done in the past really backfired, because you know, one size fits all approach doesn't ever work. So if you can come to Abuja and deliver a program in the same Abuja, the method you use, Abuja is the capital of Nigeria. The same method you used in Abuja will backfire just a few hours down the road, because you've gone to a community that doesn't speak English. So you must use the native population or the native representatives, local representatives, to speak for them. So that's one major observation. People now want to take tell their stories by themselves. They also want to manage funds by themselves. And so that's where it's also going, teaching them too how to be accountable for the funding, because sometimes you can hear that an international organization or donor has donated maybe millions of euros or millions of dollars to a particular state, and you think that the whole money is just for that activity. But if you break it down, the logistics of it, it might include transportation, it might include several other things. But then the beneficiary or the state that is handling, or the partner that is handling those funds, may need to be sensitized or built, or trained on the various elements of that funding. Then again, I'll also say that the social media has been very, very helpful for many Nigerians in speaking up. Most people might not have the time or the space to air their views, but they rely on social media to get their voices heard. A few months ago, you will hear that the Twitter accounts were Twitter was suspended from operating in Nigeria. So it has affected a lot of people who are using it to speak up, a lot of people who are using it for their business. But that issue is is a very sensitive issue. It's being sorted out as well. Then regarding human rights, most many Nigerians have also realized they they are more aware of their human rights, and a lot of NGOs, a lot of civil society organizations, you see when something goes wrong in Nigeria, they come out and speak up and have some activism around it. That's at some point I also took part, and that will lead me to the next point I wanted to make, which is about okay, before I go to that point, then the final one is the coronavirus. Yeah, a lot of negative things happened with the coronavirus, but it gave us an advantage too. That advantage of being able to communicate with people without traveling to their locations. A lot of people are doing Skype, Zoom, online meetings. A lot of platforms are coming up. People are becoming more dynamic in their thinking, and things are working for several people. Of course, there are some shortcomings with your question. There are some areas where we haven't met up, but these are some of the areas that also are positive and should be highlighted. So regarding the activism and then speaking about their rights, remember I mentioned the issue my mom went through, which made me as a woman to feel to be stronger and not want to go through what she went through, because during her time in those 90s, there weren't many active civil society organizations. And if there were, they didn't have that kind of voice that groups have today.
So some time ago in 2019, I did, there was some work, I when I left, okay, I left the UN system around 2018. So it helped me to go more into my community and work with them, work with a lot of NGOs, civil society organizations, and do some research. So I, at the time, I was doing a research on a conflict-related sexual violence and then security sector reform. Then we were trying to review the Police Act, which which is several years old, that has some clauses in it that were not relatable to what the practices of today, and then some of the issues that have to do with gender relations. A lot of organizations wanted it also to be reviewed. So at the time, sometime in 2019, there was an incident that happened. I wanted to go out one evening, but something held me back. I just stayed back at home. The next morning, I heard that about 100 girls in the state capital, Abuja, which is where I was staying at the time, about 100 women and girls had been arrested, and all of them were accused of being sex workers. So it was called the Abuja raid. So many of them were arrested, many of them were locked up, and they couldn't defend themselves, they couldn't speak for their rights. So I wrote about it. It touched me so much. I wrote about it that it's a scary thing to be a woman in today's Nigeria. When you wake up, you're hanging out with your friends and you are dragged off into a vehicle and, you know, called a sex worker, and you're arrested for it and so on. So the issue was a very controversial one at the time. A lot of restaurants were closed down, a lot of eateries, supermarkets, nightclubs and so on. So people, women were being picked at random. And for what reason, I don't know. I think there was a project that some agencies were managing at the time and led them to pick women up at random, which was not just right. So a couple of organizations, and then there was a peaceful demonstration, a peaceful protest against it. And I was one of the people who participated because it touched me as a woman, and I knew that it could happen to me. So so a lot of women woke up, men joined them too, and it was called the Abuja raids. So people were speaking up against it, going to court and trying to get their rights back. A lot of women were eventually released, and then recently we found out that many of those who went to court won their case, and they were settled with they had a court settlement because it was not right to have picked them up at random, having committed no crime. So it's something I can say I'm very proud of, including my involvement also in the review of the Police Act. It was a bill at the time. So today we have a Police Act which is more comprehensive and more of more modern than it was in the past.
Yes, somehow reflecting more current situations, dynamics in society, and you've very succinctly and clearly again have taken us through some changes and some developments in society, say in the capital, because as you pointed out, Nigeria is a huge country with a big population, so one can just easily describe a country in the same way. Sometimes it's something I notice in Western media, which I follow, where sometimes Africa is used as if one word, the whole continent, can describe all the
cities
in the country. I wonder whether you want to actually say something about that as well, because I know that you're also involved on the communication side of things. Maybe something short before we go to the second track, Neka.
Yes, yeah. So that communication, yes, it has helped me to bridge that link, because I'm a cultural person at heart. I'm an artist at heart, but I'm not able to express that. So I can say maybe through the communications work I do for organizations, maybe writing stories and so on, it helps me to paint the picture of what someone is going through for another audience to see. So like I said, you can't tell someone's story until you've experienced it yourself, and you are the best person to tell your own story.
Yeah. Okay, Nika, so after that further comment from your end, which I thank you for, I remind listeners, I'm speaking with Nika Egbuna from Abuja, Nigeria, about her career path, her experiences, her profession, and also personal development, as guests do on this show, Campus Aliyuhor. For the second track, Nika, what have you chosen for us and why?
Yes, you know, I love the 70s. I don't know, it's this free spirit thing. I think it was a movement they had at the time. This free, what, there's a word for it, what do you call it? I can't remember, but there was this free.
Oh, you're making me think of sort of the years of free love and the protests against wars, like in
Vietnam. Yes.
The flower power of the 60s.
Yes. Anyway, there's this thing about the 70s that I love, and the freedom and the music and so on. So when there's this DJ, I can't remember his name now, but he had this song with Pharrell Williams and Katy Perry, which is called Feels or so, or Catching Feels. So whenever I play it, it reminds me of the 70s beats that my parents used to play and I used to hear when I was a child. And also that feel-good feeling. So it's an old track. I can't remember the year. Maybe it's about 5 years ago now or 6 years ago. But it's Feels by Katy Perry, Will Ferrell, and Pharrell Williams, Katy Perry, and... I can't remember the DJ's name, but that's Feels for me.
Let's have a listen to it then.
Okay, I hope you like it too.
Do you like getting paid or getting paid attention? Like, you mix the wrong guys with the right intentions. In the same bed, but it still feel long distance. Yeah, yeah. You're looking for a little more consistency. But when you stop looking, you gon' find what's meant to be. And honestly, I'm way too done with the hoes. I cut off all my X's for your X and O's. I feel my old flings was just preparing me. When I say I want you, say it back, parakeet. Fly your first class through the air, Airbnb. I'm the best you had, you just be comparing me to me. I'ma add this at you. If I put you on my phone and upload it, it'll get maximum views. I came through in the clutch, more than lipsticks and phones. Wore your fake cologne just to get you alone.
Don't be afraid to catch feels.
Don't be afraid to catch these feels.
Ride your cup and chase through.
again, Nika Egbuna, my guest today on the show, for that very interesting beat. And over the music break, we had time to check the DJ, didn't we, Nika?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, Calvin.
Yes, so Calvin Harris is the DJ. Yeah,
that is the DJ. Coming to the last part of our program, there was another connection, a personal connection with Nigeria, vicarious, not direct. But you also made me remember when you were speaking about sort of the national dimension, also the international dimension of Nigeria, and also thinking of the power of narration and the power of stories in the written form, music, on film. There's a lot sort of that internationally is reaching out to a global audience and attracting attention to various stories stemming from different members of society. In my case, for example, there is a number of films and a number of books that speak about different stages of the development of Nigeria, especially in the post-colonial period, including moments of warfare, moments of reconciliation. One particular writer that particularly had struck me is Tejo Cole. And his books like Open City, or even his writings, his articles, especially on the American press, him being a Nigerian American writer. And I think when I read something like Tejo Cole's writing, it makes me think about the great energy, great potential, the positives that are going on, however, very much laced by and framed by difficulties, tragic stories, in terms of heritage and culture. For example, I remember the episode he narrates about going to the National Museum in Abuja, I believe, the capital city, where he sees his heritage, his lineage, also associating with it as someone who doesn't live there anymore and has his life in the US, in New York, and seeing how underrepresented and poorly represented it is. So you did make me think throughout this interview how important self-representation is, because also in the context of colonial, post-colonial times, and you did comment about this on the work of civil society, cultural organizations, and funding, very important, where one's telling one's own stories together as a community, to the wider international community, is really, really important. So for this final section, Nika, I wonder whether we can sort of cast our view a bit forward. And maybe you could tell us a little bit where you think your sector, your field of work, your profession, your community seems to be going, what trends seem to be the real ones pushing for future developments. And particularly in mind from what you told us, I suspect that the field of young people, women, civil society, but even the private sector and private entrepreneurs who are taking maybe more responsibility to try to push things forward.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. To generalize, to make it a little bit more general, you'll find out that almost every Nigerian you speak about or you speak to has something they have to offer. And many of them have a lot of skills and a lot of talents, but they don't know where or how to express it. And going back to your point about calling everyone in Africa without necessarily finding out where they are, where they come from, or maybe their countries. So that generalization is not always good. It doesn't really help. There is this poem I wanted to refer to, an English poem, but it talks about people who just move on. They keep moving without really reflecting on their lives, or they just exist without actually living. I can't remember the name of the poet or the poem anymore, but I'll say, really, this is the situation I find most Nigerians, okay? We are just moving on. There's a lot of harm that has been damage that has happened to a lot of people, a lot of harm that has come to a lot of people. And I think if we are to move on as a nation, this mental health therapy, counseling is something we should take seriously in the country, because a lot of people are broken. You can see the kind of crisis that is happening in the country. Mm-hmm.
all parts of the country they are affected. So I think before people can move on to call themselves maybe big intellectuals, or you are a big civil society organization, or you've made this impact or the other, I think it's important also to retrace our steps. Who are we? Who are we really? Yeah, we have arts, we have culture, but how many people have taken time to really appreciate it and recognize maybe a museum as a repertory, or where you deposit or store your heritage, your history? How many of us have really taken time? So what is happening in the country today? Many people are not interested in the arts anymore. Some artists just paint for art's sake. It's art for art's sake because they just need to get that money and move on. The cost of living in the country is also too high, and that's coming mostly from the pandemic. People want to survive, and I think, like I said, before they can make a lot of progress, most young people, they have so much to offer. If you were following the NSAS crisis that happened sometime in October last year, you will see that they've woken up, they really want a lot. But then we have to introduce mental health issues, mental health conversations into our work. And that's where I want to be able to train a lot of people. I want to be able to make an impact in people's lives so that they can also retrace their steps and make better decisions for their future, because a lot of hurt is going around. I also want to help in building the knowledge. Like, I think I have up to 20 or 23 years knowledge and experience in the areas I've worked with, and I don't want to die with my knowledge. I want to train young people too, who are starting up in their career, in any area of my life they are interested in, whether it's gender, whether it's culture, development, humanitarian work. At least I have some skills I can offer and show them, just to kickstart, like as a mentor. And thankfully, there is social media. Many of us are online. Most of our phones are smartphones. You can take courses and lessons on WhatsApp. You can use text messages. You can use phone calls. You can use Skype, Zoom, and Google Meet. There are so many platforms that Nigerians are leveraging today. So I'd really like to be very helpful. And for the civil society organizations, apart from also speaking on our rights and fighting for justice, we also need to go back and make this mental health issue very popular. I got to find out when I went for my own counseling that many people don't like going for counseling because they feel they can get over it. But then you realize in their relationships with people or their families or their children that there is some backlog of pain that they've not been able to address. And then thinking about what is happening in the country again, especially around the security situation, I keep asking myself, 10 years time, a child that was born in the heart of insecurity will be 20. What legacy would that child leave if that child has not been, if the mental health of that child has never been looked into or addressed? So it's very important to look forward in the next 10 years, in the next 5 years, where are we going to? Who will be our leader? The leaders of tomorrow are the same people who are suffering and going through pain, hurts, abductions, and what have you today. So, it touches me a lot.
Yes, this is really interesting. The looking back to look forward, and somehow I'm able to relate to also where we started off this conversation, looking at issues of culture, looking at issues of heritage, tangible, but also the intangible tradition and knowledge, which is carried on from generation to generation, from people of different experiences and life. And it struck me how you said that somehow the informality of it might be a really good, important and strong vehicle of allowing you, for example, to practice as a mentor to younger people, because possibly more official or structured systems and methods of education are not there or still lacking or maybe too privatized in Nigeria, as well as happens in many other places around the world. I wonder whether as a final comment you'd agree with that or maybe would like to add something to it.
Yeah, I would say it's not a common thing. The educational system is mostly direct and straightforward. It's not a common thing to really look into people's emotions as such. Some schools have guidance counselors. they counsel you on your careers, but you tend to find that there are some teachers who don't really understand these things, and they treat a pupil or student in a way that even compounds the issues. So I wouldn't want to sound too negative, but
yes.
Mental health is something that should come out of its own. Some schools address it, but not every school. Most private schools are more likely to address it,
mm-hmm.
but it should be something that cuts across. It's a component of development that the COVID-19 pandemic has really made very clear and very open. Last year alone, the country declared a state of emergency against rape, because a lot of women who were on lockdown were raped in very high numbers, women and girls. The cases were so high, and people couldn't deny it anymore, that mental health is something that should be addressed. So I think it's something, if I'm going to talk about anything or have any activism, I really want to stay on the mental mm-hmm. health path, yes. And then communication, again, telling your own story by yourself. People should talk, people should voice up. We bottle things up a lot, and then it can backfire sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Neka, I really appreciate your time and your telling us your story, and
yes.
so many other stories that have surrounded you over the development of yourself as a person and of yourself as a professional in your field. So thank you very much again.
Thank you.
For those stories. And also for the music, which was really, really a nice element as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Really appreciate. Bye.
Tama li dik l-intervista ma Neka Eguna min Abuja in Nigeria. Kienet interessanti għalikom, jena sitta interessanti u anki motivanti ħafna għal-mod kif tapproċċa x-xogħol tagħha, kif tiżviluppa l-idea tagħha b'mod prattiku, immens fid-dinja tagħha ta' speċjalista fil-komunikazzjoni u attivista fl-arti fil-kultura, u jekk huwa l-każ tistgħu tgħidu tisimgħu il-programma kif sensilha kollha fuq is-sit ta' Campus FM bil-mużika b'kollox. U anki is-seguna matul ix-xandiriet li jsiru fuq ir-radju minn ġimgħa l-oħra. Nirringrazzjakom u nistiedinkom nagħdu magħna l-programm ieħor il-ġimgħa d-dieta sajt.